Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston, how are you this evening?
Oh, I am golfed out.
We played a big boy course, which we will talk about later.
It was a big boy course.
It was a big boy course. And we, like I said, we'll talk about it later on in the show. But yeah, yes. Little windswept and sunbaked.
Oh, today. Yeah.
So there will be, we'll try to get the energy into the show. I think we will. There's a lot. Well, there's not a lot to talk about, but there's a lot within the few subjects to talk about. Mm-hmm. First off, we'll give the major its due. Cam Smith, mullet man.
Mm-hmm.
Gets it done with a crazy good round and a crazy good putting performance, which through the first nine holes didn't look like it was going to happen. And then bingo, bango, bongo, 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 five straight, the start, the backside. And he's in the lead. And birdies, three straight before, or pars three straight before birdie in 18 to lock it away.
Yep.
And he needed the birdie that 18th hole, seeing how his playing partner that for the day, Cam Young, rolls in an eagle putt to move to 19. Totally. Pretty good group, though. Pretty good group. They were, what is that, 15 under?
Yeah, no kidding.
As a two ball there. And just nuts.
It was a lot of fun golf. I felt like this major was a little bit more. It was a little bit more exciting with the names that you were seeing near the top of the leaderboard. Yes. But as you really watch the final day unfold, it wasn't very back and forth, and it wasn't very like, oh my gosh, the lead just switched. Oh, you know, oddly enough, it just started to unfold and there was nothing you could do about it. And it just happened.
It just,
and you're like, you're it's like, over.
Well, like I said, you just, after nine holes, you basically thought, well, Rory's got this, because Hovland is just like wilting, right? Just not doing anything. And Rory just seems like he's plugging along, you know, has hole number 10, hole number 14, hole number 18, right?
Yeah.
So you think he's at least got three, possibly four birdies on that backside that he's got in hand. And yeah. it didn't quite go that way. I don't know. He birdies 10. So, but I mean, he has two birdies. He doesn't have any bogeys. So that tells me, so he drove 10 because he two putts every single green. Yeah. So in that there, since he didn't have a bogey, so he hits 18 greens as well. Right.
Yeah.
We talked about this since like 18 greens. You think something would happen, but it didn't. But it's because he didn't hit it close enough.
He really didn't. And people are going to say, well, he almost made some putts. And people were posting it on social media about how close his putts were. Like, here's the reality. If you're 60 feet away and you lag it close, that was just a fortunate circumstance.
Wow, if that you was just make a great putt.
It's, if you make it, it's a miracle is what it is. And And you really can't consider a lot of the putts he had actual birdie putts.
Right.
Right. Like, and I pulled up the PGA Tour strokes gain putting stats, the one putt percentages from your actual distances. If you're over 20 feet, you have a 14. If you're at 20 feet, you have a 14% chance of making a putt. I'm sorry. That is not a birdie putt.
No.
No, 14% chance of something is not like a birdie putt. Yeah, that's a two putt par.
Yeah, but even from 10 feet, what does it say from 10 feet?
10 feet, it's a 38% chance. Yeah. So your chance is double from 20 to 10, but
it's still not a one in two proposition, right? It's not a coin flip.
And yeah, you are putting a birdie putt, and sure, you see the PGA Tour players dropping putts from 10 feet, and that happens, but I mean, this is an overall percentage for the tour, right? So yeah, if somebody gets hot, they may blow these statistics out of the water. But statistically speaking, you can't call something that's 13 feet like a true birdie putt because there's only a 25%, a one out of four chance of making it, right? So if you're saying, oh, Rory, you were so close, he had a one in four chance. I wouldn't even bet money on him making a putt from a one in four chance.
No.
And so it's crazy because you really look at what was potentially convertible. And it was like one putt on hole number three when he had about a 6 or 7 footer.
Yeah.
And then on 18, I mean, the truth is really in his approach shots. Yes, he's hitting it on the green, but he's miles away from the hole, like all the time. And that birdie putt on 18 wasn't even like a good birdie putt, right? No. Like pitch it close, man.
Yeah. So it's great. It's crazy. You just don't, right? You don't knock down those putts. And if they're not going like they weren't, right? It's just one of those things. And Cam Smith had that the day before, right? Where he had some good chances that were probably closer than all Rory's, but he didn't make them, right? And then makes one crazy mistake to make himself a double. But if you look at his rounds, he has 3 holes. He has 1 bogey in round 1. Cam Smith does. He has 0 bogeys in round 2. And he has 1 bogey and a double in round 3 to shoot 1 over because he throws in 2 birdies on top of that. But he had nothing going that day.
Yeah.
And then round 4, a bogey free 64, right? So make 6 birdie. No, 8 birdies. But it just, it's there. And he wins. It had to have been, and I don't know, we could probably find these stats somewhere. You'd have to look a little deeper, but he had to have won stroke gain putting by a mile, even with his mediocre putting round on in round three. Yeah.
Yeah. Cameron Smith did lead the strokes gain stat for the Open Championship. So he was just rolling the rock and he was making some putts that he probably shouldn't have made. But he was making the putts that he needed to make as well. And so just put himself in good positions. But, you know, I could even go through like Rory's round. He just wasn't close to the hole. Like anytime you think, oh, like on number one, he almost made, he was 6 yards away on number one. That's 18 feet. He's got a 17% chance of making a birdie putt. Not a birdie putt, folks. Sorry. So it's
a birdie chance, but it's not a like it's a birdie chance opportunity. It's birdie chance. It's not a birdie opportunity.
Yeah.
It's by chance that goes in, right?
And the reason Rory hit 18 greens is because these greens are monstrous. They're huge.
Because you have double greens, so that adds some, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't uncommon this week to have somebody with a over 100 foot putt. No. And it just pops up on the screen like no big deal. 114 feet. No, that's, it's a big green, right? When the, in the stat was a little skewed because they were talking about it in the average green size at St. Andrews is 27,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And the biggest one is just a little over 33,000 square feet, but they're double mm-hmm. greens. So they're big. So you could miss it because it was also what slowed it down. And there was a little thing about that, but you'd see players walking, or you'd see them hit a shot and they're like, nope, that's the one going out because the yellow's the one going out. This is the one coming back in. The red's the one coming back into the clubhouse. So you'd see him hitting, and that still counts as a green hit, even though he's got 130 feet. So, yeah, they're big. You can hit them, but you're not always going to be in the best positions to make a putt, for sure. So, I don't know. It's like I said, he just didn't hit anything close. He had some opportunities, but it just wasn't his day, right? He doesn't make a bogey, so it's not like he just chopped it all over. He just didn't hit it close enough.
Yeah, and
really, really good chances.
And he should have, you know, he definitely should have converted on 14. You know, the par five when he didn't.
Yeah, and, I mean, he doesn't hit a good shot there. He's got to drive 9. He should drive 12. He should drive 18.
He should drive 18, and he didn't. But a lot of people were, and that was a birdie hole. Whether you're driving or not, it's kind of irrelevant. But you should be freaking birdieing it. So,
yeah, and where he left it on 18 was just. Like, he didn't really even give himself a chance because he knew he needed to make eagle at that point. Like, it wasn't even in a really good spot. It was short enough where he had to hit it. He couldn't take out his putter to try to just run it up that thing. He had to chip it over that valley instead of just putting it up through and doing something there. So, just, I think, some missed strikes. I don't think he was hitting it as solid as he was the previous couple of days. So it happens.
No, I don't know. And funny enough, because I see it differently than a lot of people, I felt like he actually had a good putting day, because as far away from the hole as he was hitting it, the dude never had like a comeback putt over 3 feet.
His long putting was phenomenal all week. It was phenomenal. Right.
Yep, absolutely. And I just pulled the stats from the open.com on his distances away from the hole. The front nine.
I'm just looking on the front at this too.
So get this. Hole number one, 18 feet. He's got a 17% make chance. Hole number two, 27 feet, less than 10% chance. Hole number three, 6 feet. It's got a 65% chance. So he should have made that one. Hole number four, 30 feet, less than 10%. Hole number five, 18 feet, 17%. Hole number six, 15 feet.
But he makes that one. Well,
no. Well, no, he two-putted for birdie.
He two-putted for birdie, that's right.
So he should have made eagle.
Well, 18 feet, that's still, 17%?
It's 17%. Not very likely. It's number six, 15 feet, 22% chance. Number seven, 42 feet. Number eight, 45 feet. Number nine, 12 feet. And that was a little bit closer to 30% make chance.
Yeah, and like. Like on eight. So what, eight was, he was 15 yards away. Yeah, he's 45 feet. That's a good two putt. Yeah.
That's an amazing two putt, especially out there. So his average distance, what was that? Whew. just on the front nine, because I didn't get to the back nine. His average distance was 23 feet to the hole at St. Andrews on Sunday. And your make percentage on 23 feet is 11% on the PGA Tour.
So he just didn't give himself a lot of chances. Does it say, so what was, because like saying, this is the difference. Cam got his putter rolling and started rolling in some putts. What was Cam's?
Oh, I'd have to go through individually. They don't have these stats available. I had to go through each shot selector.
Well, and just pulling it up on the thing. That was nice that they had that, how far they were away from the hole at least. But yeah, you're just like, it's just not right. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. And so it's just, you got to hit the ball closer. And that's why it was such a ho-hum day shooting two under. And maybe it was, some of it was don't make a mistake.
It looked like, especially in where you can see it with him, maybe a little bit more even than that, was just because he didn't get it to some of those greens. Like, he didn't let loose, right? 18, he drove it like right up next to it with a driving iron, I think, the previous 3 days. Mm-hmm. And he hit driver the last day and didn't get it there. And I mean, the wind can switch, but it's just not that easy to make when you're giving yourself 18, right?
Yeah.
18 to 25 footers all day. It just doesn't, that doesn't pan out. Because if you look at him, he had a couple of longer ones, but all of his, for the most part, were in that like 15 to 25 foot range. So chances, but not like anything you're going to hang your hat on.
No.
To go out there and make.
Even the back nine numbers are even like more dismal. I'm going through and pulling all of it. I mean, this is going to be pretty telling once you get these ones too. But these aren't 13 footers. These are 13 yarders. It's not even the same ballpark.
Right.
It's pretty crazy. I'm pulling up 18 right now. So last one. Yeah. Okay. Get some averages here. Okay, his average distance from the hole just increased for the entire day. It was, is that right? I gotta check number 10. Yeah, no, that was right. He was really far away on number 10. Yeah, okay.
He two-putted. Yeah. It was a great putt.
It was amazing two-putt. The reason it was amazing two-putt is because 126 feet away.
Yeah.
That's why. So, okay, his average distance from the hole on the final day was 32.5 feet. Provide. Yeah.
Oh, so you're just doing it. That was 23 and a half was for the whole week?
Just the final day. For every green regulation, the putt for birdie, his first putt after his approach shot, whether it was putt for eagle or putt for birdie. So the first putt after his approach shot hitting the green regulation, his average distance from the hole was 32.5 feet.
Dude.
And I mean, listen to the back nine, 126 feet, which he two putt for birdie because he drove the green. Right. 42 feet on 11, not a birdie putt. Number 12, 12 feet. That was pretty close.
Yeah, that one's one that you have a chance.
You have a chance. Number 13, 60 feet. Nope.
Oh, yeah.
Number 14, 18 feet. Nope. Number 15, 42 feet. Nope.
Nope.
Number 16, 39 feet. Nope.
Nope.
Number 17, 15 feet. No, well, I mean, it's kind of there, but it's not. Not again, like 15 feet is 22%. Yeah. It's and then the last hole, number 18 feet, which is,
oh yeah,
again, 17% make chance. Those, I would say, legitimately, when you're under 10 feet, you've got a chance for birdie, and he only had one putt for birdie or eagle under 10 feet the entire day.
Yeah, and I mean, just let's, if we just contrast that, Cam Smith, so he doesn't drive number 10, but so this is just 2 yards, so 6 feet on 10. So 11. Let's see. Come on, let's pull it up. So 15 feet. So that's right in that range where we're like, yeah, you know, it's a good putt to make. Number 12, I think he was tied again. Oh, he two putted that one because he drove the green.
He drove the green. So, but even, I mean, birdie.
Yeah. So 24 yards. So 72 feet.
You had an 11 footer for birdie.
On that one? Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah. And then you're talking 13.
Yeah. No, 14. Yeah. So he ended up with 11 feet. So that's a good putt, right? So he makes some putts. And then 13, I think he was. He was 18 feet.
He made a bomb. Yeah, he's 18 feet. 18 made feet. A bomb.
So, like I said, and it's not to say that it can't happen, but it's just not going to as much. Right?
Yeah. Statistically, with what Rory did, it just wasn't going to happen as much.
He must have just, because he hits it over on 14. And then chips it up to like nothing because I can't even get the.
It was less than 6 feet or something.
It was, yeah. But then he misses one from 30 feet on 15.
As expected.
Yeah. And then
on 16.
16, he's 30.
It's 24 feet. So he's
24 out. Feet. Oh. Yeah.
And then on 17, he makes an up and down to save his life.
Yeah, hits it up there. But yeah, he's 9 feet. I mean, he's that's inside 10. And then he's kicking again on 18. Yeah,
and then he just puts it up to like a foot on 18. So, I mean, he scrambled like crazy on the drivable par fours. And he got it done, but he had legitimate like putts at it. They're all under 10 feet with the exception of one. He made a bomb, right?
He made one that was 18 feet.
Yeah.
Everything else, like I said, there was a couple that were in that 12 to 15 foot range, but significantly closer. You didn't see like a whole bunch that were like, oh, he had the one that he two putted on 12.
Yeah.
That was a long one. As for his first putt.
Yep.
So, noticeable contrast in where the iron shots were hit as well.
Exactly. And so you can't putt good. So yes, he did have a bad putting day because you can't putt good from that far away from the hole. Statistically, you just can't.
Yeah.
And Cam Smith put it closer. And when you put it closer, you have better odds of making putts. When you have better odds of making putts and you have some mojo, and you're feeding off of Cameron Young, who's also just going nuts. He's going shooting minus seven. There's a lot of stuff.
Cameron Young has seven birdies and an eagle and two bogeys. Yeah. I mean, let's talk about that dude. I did not, after his first round, I thought he was going to just kind of fall off. That didn't happen.
No, he was really kind of, it was kind of weird because it was never like, The show kind of presented it as a battle between Cameron Smith and Rory McIlroy, and Cameron Young was kind of just a side note. I felt like that. But
well, when he did it, because he never really, right, he pushed up to that point where he was 17 under, and right before Cam Smith got to 17 under. But that, like I said, that five-hole stretch, flipped everything on its head.
Yeah.
And he really wasn't in his position until he eagled 18, which gave him that two-stroke bump into minus 19. Because otherwise, it's just a birdie and he ties Rory.
Yeah. So, I mean, but, like I said, it's not like any – like he had a bad day.
No, not at all. But, I mean, he tore it up. He had two bogeys on the day and shot seven under. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. He did well. He did well.
Yeah.
But then so, it was a fun open to watch.
Whether, oh, yeah.
And it so much is dependent, right? Getting a major champion at minus 20 to win seems kind of, you're like, well, that's not supposed to happen. But at the Open, it's going to, if the weather is like it was this week, right? They had a couple of stretches where it got bad, right? The afternoon session on Thursday was a little bit tougher than the morning session, but nothing got out of control. And when you don't have a ton of wind and elements and the course is playing firm, right? Uh-huh. I think the fairways were playing firmer than the greens were, like way. So it's like,
well,
perfect, well, like kind of that perfect storm of everything's running out through the fairways, but then you can still manage the greens.
Well, and you know something's up when Tiger Woods is the guy who hits the longest drive of like the whole thing. He had like a 412-yard drive. He's by far not the fastest clubhead speed guy out there. And he just got the right kick on an absolute concrete fairway, and the thing rolled out like another 130 yards. So, oh, yeah, it was crazy.
Just nuts on that. So, I mean, it was good, and it's fun, and you've got the history, and it just, with how it was set up, kind of that, because they didn't really put any pins in any super tough spots either. It seemed like they're like, we're going to let these guys have some fun. All right. Let's see what happens. But you have, I mean, how many par fours? Like four or five drivable par fours, because you have 9, 10, 12, 18. So that's four. And wasn't there a couple of others that they were getting close to? There was a couple that they were getting close to do it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there was definitely quite a bit, but. And it's, yeah, I mean, the course obviously didn't play that hard in that regard, because the main score was minus 20. I mean, these guys tore it up. When the cut, you know, there's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's only 8 players out of 83 that were over par. And then the 74 rest are either even or under par.
Mm-hmm.
It's that course was just, it was really like a par 68.
Right. It's just one of those things that it's because of how it is and how it was playing, it was going to play easy. Mm-hmm. Easier. Right. But that's kind of what you expect.
Yep.
Because you also expect 15 to 20 mile an hour winds for a good percentage of it, which makes things a little bit more difficult. When it doesn't have those, these guys are going to have a field day. It's going to be low scores galore. But in that, we found out the next day that the claret jug. It's two beers. he was a pretty good guess. He was like, oh, I figure this holds about two to maybe two and a half when he was talking about it earlier. But and that was in his press conference that he was guessing that. And the next day it was confirmed that it was two beers. But in that presser, a reporter brought up Liv Golf. And asked Cam Smith, and Cam Smith shrugged it off, which it's probably not the right place to ask about it, right? Wait till the next day, he just barely, within the hour, won the claret jug, and you're asking him about Liv Golf. Like, whatever, it's a reporter that wants to, and I don't know who it was, so I didn't care, but it's just a reporter who wants to get, hey, I want to get my name out there, right? So he asked him about it, but there are rumors, and rumors are kind of flying around pretty loose right?
Yeah. In fact, if you aren't rumored to switch, then it's like, what's wrong with you?
But the ones that they say they're in actual talks, Cam Smith, supposedly there's $110 million offer on the table. Henrik Stenson, they didn't give numbers, but supposedly he's looking to jump ship. And the one interesting thing about Henrik Stenson, which I didn't even realize, I just wasn't paying attention to it or just didn't remember, but he is the Ryder Cup captain. Which, if he does go, will strip him of that. David Faraday, which I think is going to be fun. Him as an announcer. Oh, color commentary. It's going to be awesome.
Well, and he knows the game, and he's been doing it for a long time. And I think it's just going to let him get free reign. He doesn't have to watch his tongue anymore, and he can just say whatever he wants. I'm sure it'll be even more entertaining.
he's the one guy that he got barred from announcing the Masters because he said, they're like bikini wax. Yeah, that's like they bikini wax the greens or something. It was pretty tame stuff.
And it's just a joke, and you're just laughing, and next thing you know, it's like you're banned.
Yeah, so it's there. And three, and these were looser things. Tommy Fleetwood, Mark Leishman, and Bubba Watson.
Yep.
All which I think are very real possibilities, right? Tommy's been playing better as of late, but why would you not? A friend of mine did an Instagram post today, and it was kind of funny. He's like, with all these rumors, and he's like, heard that there's going to be, after the FedEx Cup is over, there's going to be multiple top players jumping to the LIV Tour. But he made a funny comment. He's like, it's basically going to be Brandon Chambly falling around Rory McIlroy out there. I'm like, if it gets down to that point, what does the PGA Tour do? Because they've backed themselves into a corner pretty good, because at this point, do you kind of soften your stance and meet with Liv? Because Greg has been, as much as I don't think he does hold a grudge on the PGA Tour for a few things, he's always, at least in word, said that he's been open to them working together. And I think it could be good. I think the one who's the party that's making it worse for the tour is the tour themselves, or worse for golf is the tour themselves with their stance. But it'll be interesting. Like I said, this next week to 2 weeks, the win is, how many do they have before? It's getting close to the end of the regular season.
Before
it gets into the silly season.
Tournaments that you actually want to watch, you know?
Yeah, before it kind of gets into that silly season. But, I mean, it's coming up. It's not like it's super far away from where we're at now, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so
you have got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 till the end of the year. 6 tournaments.
Yeah, that's it.
6 tournaments at the end of the year. So basically 2 months-ish. And there's a lot of stuff that could be going down that is going to, I think, put a real strain on PGA Tour upper management. You'd be like, oh boy. And
it already has. I mean, if you just dissect how each one of these public figures, the executives of each tour, have dealt with this, Greg has probably dealt with it the best. I mean, there's been some hiccups here and there, but if you just grade them, Greg by far had the best reaction to what's been going on and best strategies going forward. Monahan was entirely reactive, and he was just doing every angle he could to make it look bad, and at the same time making himself just look even worse. So yeah, it's I think it exposed the true colors of the management of PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. And I'd mentioned this before, but if you're a PGA Tour player and you're seeing this management team go, oh, and we also are going to introduce 8 new tournaments with no cuts and more money, and we're also going to increase purses, and we're also, wait, why did you have to do this after Greg Norman? Why didn't you do it before?
Yeah.
And it just shows like the true colors that the players weren't necessarily put first in this scenario. And Phil knew it, and he called him out on it. And then he got slapped on the hand for being right.
Yeah.
So,
well, and somebody said it, and it was another Instagram that I follow. And he's like, and his statement was, and I can't remember who it was, or I'd give him his credit, but it was, does anybody else think that LIV was the best thing to happen to Rory's game? But he's been playing some of the best golf that he's played, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see who actually goes. But if they get right, if Cam Smith goes, I think that's a huge loss, because you got younger kid who is on the ups, just won a major, and now he look at you jump ship, right? If you get Henrik's older, but he's still a pretty big name, Bubba Watson, right? Mark Leishman, Tommy Fleetwood's been playing better, is kind of put himself in contention. But if Smith goes, I mean, that's probably your best player today, because what is he in the world golf rankings now? What does that put him? Got to be close to top 5, right?
Yeah.
After that. So, I mean, you got that. If you get a few other guys like him going, right, it moved him up to 2. So you have the number 2 player in the world moving if he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's shaking some things up big time.
Totally.
But we shall see what happens.
Yeah.
And that, and Cam Smith winning does, I think every single major winner was under the age of 30 this year, I think is what they said too.
Well, that's crazy.
So
I did see that as well. So young man's game, except for last year when Phil won the PGA, but this year it is a young man's game.
Yeah. This year it's definitely trending that way. But let's go through Cam Smith bag. I know that we've done it a few times, but there was one major switch.
Yeah. And we'll cover kind of most of these, but we'll kind of run through it because there's some new stuff in the bag for Cameron Smith. And we're starting at the top. He does have the new Titleist TSR2 driver in the bag.
Yes.
And from what I see, and my memory isn't the best, but I believe this is the first Ventus TR win.
I believe so too. Yes, I think so.
The Ventus TR shaft is in between the black and the blue. And you know the shaft well because you play it.
I do have it.
So it's just something right in between. I play the black because I have a little bit quicker transition, and so it's stable for me. But if you like something a little bit smoother, then the TR is a little bit closer to that, and then the blue is even closer to smoothness. So
yeah.
But yeah, he's got the TR in the driver and the three wood. And I think, is that the first win for the, no, I don't think it's the first win for the TSR.
But, no, who had it? Oh, somebody had it in their bag. JT Poston had it in his
bag. Yeah, Poston had it back. But that's pretty cool to see that that driver is performing and the tour players are liking it and just knocked off a major. So that's pretty sick. So, yeah, Cameron Smith, he had a three wood, a little bit higher degrees of loft. So it's kind of something that's in between that strong three wood and four wood. And then he has a Mizuno Pro High Fly 3-iron. And everybody was out there with driving irons, of course, because you could hit those and then just watch the ball roll for 100 yards. So that was awesome. But he's still gaming the Titleist T100s in 5-9-iron. And it's the best looking blade that's not a blade. it's straightforward.
It's about as close as you can get with it actually, without it actually being a blade, just because it's just as close as you're gonna get without it actually being a blade. It's a blade plus, let's say that. It's a blade
exactly.
plus.
And then on the wedges, and this was, you know, just music to our ears, but he switched out his 60 degree. And we know that Cam Smith does come to the course with two different wedges.
Yes.
And we knew that he would do this change, but he has a 60T, Vokey Wedgeworks 60T grind in the bag. And it is just the wedge of wedges when it comes to the Open Championship. I mean,
yeah, it's basically what everybody plays, right? I don't think we talked about it personally. I can't remember whether we talked about it last week when JT was testing his really low bounce K grind and the T grind for this week. But yeah, we knew Cam Smith was going to go to the T grind, but that makes 3 weeks in a row that a T grind has been in the winner circle on the on a tour sanctioned event.
Exactly.
We are getting a little bit a slap in the face because we were like, oh, the T grind is the wedge of all wedges, and it wasn't winning at the rate that it did last year. But now
it's coming back.
Yeah, the upside down world is no longer. Back to normal.
Here's one of the things. If you look at the wedge profile, so if it's standing straight up and you see that it's 60 degrees loft, what's unique about this is the beveled sole. It's like a V, right? So the bounce of the sole, the V part, it typically sits around like a static bounce of like 16 degrees. Right. And then the backside of that wedge, it's as though the other side of that V actually matches the 60 degrees of loft.
Right.
So it really compresses the profile of that wedge. And if you open it up, you can play that bounce. But you can still slide it under things. And I mean, we both played tee grinds today and we had a couple of tight nippers and man, it was perfect. So it's a really cool wedge to open up. And if you do like to hit open faced wedge shots around the green, there just is no better wedge for it. So pretty spot on. And then the last part of his bag, he's just got that awesome Scotty Cameron 009 masterful in a little slant neck. And he's just been so good with that thing all year.
Yeah, he puts okay.
It's got no sight line.
I guess if you like making putts, it's okay.
Yeah, it's got no sight line. It just has a sight dot. And it's a good looking putter for sure. Yeah. And that kind of rounds out the what's in the bag for our Open champion.
Yes. But there was some things that Rory put in his bag because I watched a lot of golf this week, and it's nice because you can get up at 6 o'clock and watch a lot of golf, but and then basically go about your day and still watch a lot of golf. But we were talking about today, and I'm like, Rory's 60 looked very tee grind esque.
Oh, totally.
And he did make a couple of switches in his bags. He switched to the driving iron, which everybody was switching to a driving iron. So not that it was that, like that was that big of news, but he did switch out to the MG3 in the 46 degree to replace his standard Rohr's Proto pitching wedge. So my guess is that was just because he was going to have some of those shots and it just gave him a little bit more control with that shot is my guess is why he went to that and then put in the low bounce 60 degree to round it out just because of turf conditions.
Yeah.
The firmness.
Yeah. And it's a cool looking wedge. He's got some unique aspects to his wedges. His MG3s do not look like what's offered in retail. They are completely raw, unplated offering specifically for the tour players. Nonetheless, very low bounce. And as we talk about this.
So that's another thing that comes up is the raw finish, right? People were like, go raw finish. And some listeners may be like, well, what's a raw finish? And it's like, it's not chrome, right? It doesn't have the chrome plating on it. It rusts. But it's just, it's for feel. You get a little bit more, maybe spin and grab, but yeah, it's more for feel than anything.
There's a lot of misconception around it. And the biggest misconception is that when it's raw and it rusts, you spin the ball more. And that's actually not the case. The rust doesn't include or increase spin. Yeah. What happens is typically, and some companies have adjusted around this, but when you get a wedge that's raw, it was made just like the other wedges, mm-hmm. right? But the final product has to adhere. Well, the product that's going to be played on tour has to adhere to the USGA conformed rules, right? Right. So the grooves within the raw face are conforming. And then when you put a chrome plate over it, and granted, it's very minimal because it's a plating, it's not as big and wide right. and as sharp as the grooves that were originally made on the raw wedge. So you actually would get a little bit more volume and a little bit more spin from that volume. Right. Secondly, chrome can act as a little bit of a slippery substance in water, not dry. In dry conditions, it's very almost identical. From the fairway, you hit a wedge shot that's chromed and raw into a green, they spin, I mean, within like the 100 RPMs of accuracy, and that's like less than 1%. But if you hit it in wet conditions, chrome can act as like a slippery surface. And I've seen many chrome wedges fail in a water test. And raw actually retains some of that spin. So whatever right. the chemical properties are of that metal in, you know, in comparison to chrome, it retains spin better. And then, yeah, just the rust doesn't, don't ever let a raw wedge rust. If you let a raw wedge rust, you're going to fill the grooves in with a coating of rust, just like chrome would coat over the grooves, and you're going to reduce groove volume and also, you know, reduce spin. So keep your raw wedges clean and you'll
have a good clean experience. In general. Yeah. That's a pet peeve of mine. Just keep your clubs clean.
Yeah.
But another little fun fact after this week, Titleist golf ball swept the majors.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a surprise really with the ball dominant, with the market dominance that they have and the player dominance that they have out on the tour. I don't know that it's a ultra surprise, but usually get one of the other ball manufacturers sneaking in there. Last year you had probably all of them because you had TaylorMade with Morikawa, Callaway mm-hmm. with John Rahm, Strixon with Hideki, and then Callaway Phil again with Callaway. Phil.
Yeah.
So no Titleist. That's probably more rare than them sweeping it. I mean, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No, it was pretty crazy to see that because some of these guys are holding different club sponsorships with other companies, and they do have an option to play other golf balls. But the Pro V1 won the Masters, and the Pro V1X won the rest.
Yeah.
And that's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy stuff.
Is nuts. And then Scotty Cameron putters win 3 of the 4.
Yep.
And that one's probably more of a surprise too, because I think Odyssey has the largest number of players playing the
and I think
putter
because of that. And you can say you have the number one putter in golf for a lot of different reasons. And sometimes it's the most putters in play at a tournament,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes it's the most wins your putter gets, right? And like, for instance, many times last year it was, oh, Scotty Cameron had the most putters in, but the guy that won it was actually playing an Odyssey. Right. And so Odyssey would come back and be like, well, we won the most PGA Tour tournaments this year. We have the number one putter on tour. And then Scotty Cameron would be like, no, we have the number one putter because it's played by more PGA Tour players than anybody else. And so those definitions change by the week as to how they want to market that. But when it comes to majors, I mean, that's pretty crazy. You've got four majors, and three of them had Scotty Cameron putters. And the Lone Wolf was a Bettinardi C groove putter. Yes, C groove putter.
Yeah, it was a Bettinardi yes putter is what it was.
Yeah.
From Fitzpatrick. But yeah, crazy. It's crazy. But let's get now to the fun fun talk and our round today on the 8100 yard Promontory golf course, which we didn't play it there, guys.
No, we're not crazy.
We decided to play the member tees up a little bit so we could enjoy the round of golf on my birthday. Right. I didn't feel like getting beat over the head. But it was still plenty long, right? You had some that were longer, but if anyone's played Promontory, the Nicklaus course, the greens can get a little crazy. So when you're playing it at 81 or, you know, or around 8,000 from the very backs, or even the one up tee is where it's right. I think it's 7,600 yards or 75, I think is where they have it. But even there, when you have mid to long irons into some of those greens, because it's always windy. So you're going to get some of those holes that are going to be dead into the wind. So you're going to have, you know, mid to long irons into some of those greens, especially from the back tees. It's just not conducive to a fun round necessarily if you're out there to enjoy yourself, right? And you're not a tour player that hits it on the button at elevation 360 all day. I mean, just to give you guys idea of how hard this course is from the back tees, the course record is 68 by none other than tour pro Tony Finau, who absolutely smashes the golf ball. And he can know, and it's that may stand for a while.
I wouldn't even been within 10 strokes if I played.
It just puts some things, it puts clubs in your hand that aren't meant to be hidden into some of those greens. So,
yeah,
like I said, I don't mind the layout. I think you need to push it forward a little bit, but it's the same thing that we talked about with Thanksgiving Point from last week. The greens just need to be softened. If they are softened, you could keep them as big as they are and just make it subtle, just so you didn't have just the drastic drop-offs that you had in some of those and the drastic slopes. You'd be a lot better off. And it is a private club, and I just don't understand why you make a private club so tough.
And well, it was
the option to play it.
The greens were the most interesting thing, because to me, the easiest defense a course has is distance. And if you don't have a course that you can extend in distance, then the greens have to be the best defense. You can make a 6,800 yard course absolutely just atrocious if you are diabolical with the greens.
Yeah.
Heck, you could do that for a 6,500 yard course. But don't do it to an 8,000 yard course. Now, granted, there's some elevation changes, and I'd say you probably gain about 10% in distance at the elevation we were playing at Promontory. So you take 10% off of 8,100 yards, and you're looking at really around 7,400 yards. And that is, there's not many US Opens that are that long, and they're trying to make it just insane. And so, but when you're playing a course that long, you cannot be hitting into a green that is like the size of a Pebble Beach green and then has three drastic tiers and two false fronts on the front and the side. I mean, to hit it on the same tier as the pin itself was like, holy crap, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And so it was surprising to see that. And we basically walked around the course saying, Nicklaus must have been really pissed off that day when he was designing this.
Because he went through a couple of them, and two of them are here in Utah, because Red Ledges is very similar.
Yeah.
The green just got crazy. And I think what it is he was a grumpy old man that was pissed off at the golf ball, right? And so he decided that if the golf ball was going to go so far, he was just going to make things really tough.
Yeah.
And he did. He succeeded.
But the format and layout of this golf course, it will never hold a professional event. And it's not the logistics of fans walking around. And that usually is what immediately cancels a golf course's potential.
Yeah, that would be a tough thing too. But
all things aside though, you take the course for what it is, and the design itself would not qualify as a tour event because of how many things that we ran into that was like, oh, that was weird. Oh, that was interesting. And you got to play the course, you know, but there were some stuff where the greens were like that one green. It was at least 100 feet long. And at its thickest part, it was like 20 feet wide.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing was a strip, and it's just it was a really tough green to hit. Cause you can't hit the other 70 feet. You got to aim at that one part. And when you really just analyze what that was, it was probably one of the smallest greens you've ever seen.
Yeah. So, especially that. And it would run over and then there'd be a hump, but then in the front of that hump, right? So the hump, you'd be running lengthwise, right? And you'd go over a hump, but in that little swell, there'd be a false front in that little swell on both sides of it. So you're running into a couple things there, right. and you hit a really good shot in there, but that one's shorter. So I'll give that a little bit of a break. Yeah, right? That one's a little shorter. So you're gonna have a shorter iron into it. But there's a couple of them where you're hitting long irons into it, and it's uphill and their slope. They just kind of.
There's two things I don't. Well, there's one thing I don't like, and that's when you're hitting into a green, and the green slopes away from you, front to back, away. And I don't care if it's flat and you've got to manage spin, or if it's sloping back to front and it's very receptive to your approach shot and you got to manage spin. I think that's great. But when you have a green sloped away from you, like if you just miss it, even just a little bit, and you don't have as much spin as you normally would, you'll be off the back. Like course is like fighting you, right? And that's okay if you're 100 yards in and the hole is designed to go 100 yards in.
That's what I was going to say. There's but the one, I mean, the one, and you smoked it from the up tees, and you were a little down. I can't remember. But I mean, your hit, it was a one, you had like 170.
Yeah.
Or 160. 65, because I was back for me a little bit. I had 185, and you're just and it's uphill a little bit, so then all of a sudden, right, you add that into it now where you're taking spin off because the descent angle can't be as drastic, and you have a green that's running away from you.
Yeah. And so, I mean, all these things make a golf course difficult. I mean, the way we're talking about it, if every hole was designed perfectly, then it would be easier, right? So
it would be easier. And there's, like I said, there's some things that you could do to touch, but where the Nicklaus course, it's because it's long.
Mm-hmm.
But then it doubles down with really deep bunkers too. Really deep bunkers and severe greens.
And severe greens. And it's just like, it's like insult over injury. I can tell you right now that breaking 80 from the tips would have been like the challenge of my life. And if I did break 80 from the tips, I'd be like, that was one heck of a round.
Yeah. It would be. Yeah. That's about right. We'll have to go try it. Like I said, I've played from the tips once. Usually we play one up. Mm-hmm. Like I said, this time we played just two up. So it's not like.
And it was still crazy hard. Amount.
Yeah,
it was still hard. It was even two up. It was a 73.8 on a 142. And that's harder than most golf courses in Utah. to be honest. Yeah. So basically means if you shoot one or two over, it's like shooting even anywhere else. And that was the members tease. So
yeah, I think it's like 78.
78.7 on a 156.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I saw it as. And that's just, that's insane. That is really tough.
Yeah, it's not.
And I don't mind that. But you just, it's like, it's a little bit like Thanksgiving point from the tips, where it's just like, you shoot in the 70s today, that's a good round.
Yeah. I don't think that, but even there, right? You tip out, because we did tip out Thanksgiving point, and it wasn't, yep. It wasn't close to what.
No. And granted, there's a little elevation change, but like, it's an 8% reduction, right? At 4,200 mm-hmm. feet elevation. So
yeah,
that was,
yeah, that's negligible, but
yeah.
Oh, it was, like I said, fun round today. Like I said, that playing from the member tees, I think was challenging enough. Mm-hmm. I got off to a rough start and then brought it back. I think I was started off bad. I mean, hit a couple of good putts that just didn't go in, but I think I was like one over through my last 14 holes.
Yeah. I mean, super solid. I'd say, if I were to say the best part of your game today, when you missed a green, your scrambling was phenomenal.
It did pretty good.
Yeah. And that's why there was really no more bogeys throughout the rest of the round. Yeah. it was pretty impressive. And some of the shots you were hitting, it was like, whoa, you actually got that one close.
not easy. Like I said, not easy shots. And we'll get out and play the dyke course, which I don't like as much as the Nicklaus course, because it gets,
I've heard it's,
the greens get even more crazy, if
really
that can make sense. And I think, I don't know, it's different, but it's the same, right? It's long with really slopey greens.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, like I said, it's not a course that I would, if I had my choice, that I would play every day, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's so hard, right? You're having to play, like they say, the members tees, but what member plays a golf course at 7,100 yards?
I don't know, man. Yeah,
that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. And the Pete Dye course isn't nearly as long either. It's 7,600 yards. Well, yeah, 77. But man,
there's a lot more force carries and craziness mm-hmm. going on at the Dye course, though. So,
yeah. Well, that's something to look forward to. But yeah, great day of golf, a lot of fun, and yeah, good company. So
yeah, it was a good day. I enjoyed it, and we'll have to do it some more. I gotta keep getting courses that your wife will let you go play, since it's right
once in a lifetime.
Yeah, right, check off the bucket list items. So that's one more checked off.
Park City is full of them. I mean, if you've got money and you want a great place to like retire and have amazing golf courses available to you, there you go. Park City. Yes,
for sure. So, well, I think that's it. And I don't even, like I said, I don't even really care what's coming up. There's no more majors.
The 3M championship. You don't care about the 3M championship?
Not really. We'll talk about it because there'll be something to talk about, but there might be more juicy stuff to talk about if we get confirmations on Liv. It's gonna it's tipping the golf world on its head. And I don't really think it's bad. I don't think it's a bad thing.
No.
I think there's gonna be a lot of good, a lot of stuff that comes out of it. And I think it'll eventually force the other tours to like just get along, right? Come to the table with something rather than just be like, oh, you're evil.
Yeah, it already has done good. It's already helped the players make more money on whatever tour you're playing. It's already made the PGA Tour more accessible, whatever tour you're playing on. It's made it more accessible for college athletes and top amateurs. Like, it's, if you just look at the whole grand picture, whatever way you feel about it, it's become significantly more advantageous for golfers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great. I think it's awesome.
It's good. It's good in my book. So, but I think that's it. Weston needs to get to sleep. I can see his eyes starting to shut.
I'm glazing.
Oh, but until next time, we're out.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Birdies and Bogeys. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe, leave us a rating and review, and until next time, have a great week.